Okay, turn this. All right, welcome back. We're going to start again on impairment, long-standing project that we've asked you about many times. Manuel's going to go through the paper, which is really about the feedback that we've been receiving to the draft model that that we've ended up with. We're particularly interested in what you've heard from your fellow investors, analysts. Don't really want to, we've only got half an hour, so we can't reopen the whole debate about what we should do in terms of impairment, but I'm sure we'll be interested in your views on ways forward as well. But particularly the purpose of this is to talk about the feedback. So Manuel's going to go through it and interested in your comments. Let me put that mic on.
No.
Try it again. Is that worse? No.
And the lights on.
It's still flashing. It's the problem.
It's working. Okay. Yeah, thanks, Steve. Sorry about that. In July this year, the board basically finished a lot of the technical discussions about the three-bucket model, and that was also the time that the FASB decided to pursue an alternative model. While they have been pursuing that alternative model, we've been busy doing some drafting and also doing some outreach just to see, have some preliminary thoughts about or input about how people would be applying that, whether there'll be any concerns, and about the benefits of the information content that that the model produce. So it was mainly focused on the investors, analysts, but also for the benefit side, but also we talk to regulators, auditors, and preparers to understand whether we have this balance between benefits and costs of applying the model. There was a lot of support for distinguishing between assets that have deteriorated and other assets. So there was support for some distinction in the model if there's two measurement bases. However, that support was qualified on the basis that we needed to further clarify exactly what the criteria were proposing. There were some questions about what more than insignificant meant and what reasonably possible meant. But that was also qualified on getting the right balance between the benefits of getting that distinction right and the costs of applying those criteria for switching the measurement from a 12-month expected loss to a lifetime expected loss. We also heard about some concerns that less sophisticated banks and preparers would have in applying the model, specifically in terms of assessing those criteria for the recognition of lifetime loss, especially in relation to retail loan portfolios where the information wouldn't be very detailed and people would have to either revert to some type of delinquency indicators to apply the criteria, which would be quite lagging, or they'd have to invest significantly to develop the systems to produce the forward-looking information to make that assessment. But there were some also that asked why the board was continuing to develop this model in the absence of convergence with the FASB, and there were some questions about whether we should go back to some variants of what we had in the supplementary document, the TPA, or even back further to the original ED. We discussed the feedback at the board in last week. The board considered the feedback and asked us to go away and suggest some clarifications to the criteria to alleviate some of the concerns about or to clarify them, to make them easier to apply, but at the same time to ensure we get the balance right between the benefits of the better information you get from applying those criteria and the costs of applying them. The board also asked us to refresh their memory about the feedback that we got in the TPA and after the supplementary document, and why the board decided to pursue the three bucket model following that feedback. So we'll be bringing a brief paper back to them. It's not working?
Yeah, that's wrong,
I guess.
It is actually. Yeah.
That basically summarizes where we are. So we will be bringing a couple of papers to the November meeting with some suggestions to the board about ways they could clarify the criteria to meet those objectives. We did provide you with a summary of the feedback. So if there is anything in there that or if there isn't anything in there that you would like to add to that feedback, we'd be interested in hearing your views.
We also handed out the paper 5B, which is mentioned in the feedback summary paper, but we didn't actually include, but we've handed it out at the meeting, so you have a summary of where we are.
So, any comments? The feedback that we've obtained consistent with what you've heard? Have you been discussing this with anybody? I guess maybe some of you are tired of talking about impairment.
Well, the feedback from users is summarized in paragraphs 11 to... it's quite a big part of it. 11 to 24. Specifically, we got feedback from users that they'll prefer to a model that reflects the underlying economics. And I think the board knows that this model isn't the ideal one. We do have that sort of cliff effect still between the 12-month measure and the lifetime measure, but there were a lot of users that still supported getting that signal about when there has been a deterioration. However, some also weighed that against the management judgment involved in making that that determination. So there was some question about whether, if the criteria aren't clear enough, whether management would have too much leeway in making that that assessment.
I think the summary of feedback's fine, and you know, I think it's quite interesting that on the US side they seem to find the idea of switching from a 12-month view to a full life view more problematic than here, even though actually that's one of the areas, still one of the areas of concern here. I don't know if that's to do with their, you know, auditors preferring to have more guidelines and more prescription there or not. Just a couple of things, because I thought the summary of the feedback was fine, but some of the other things in the paper slightly surprised me, because when we were doing the response of the previous staff paper, three buckets weren't mentioned. So I actually thought there'd been a bit more simplification of the three-bucket approach, which I now see that actually what we called it the deterioration approach, but actually it's the same old approach. With no simplification.
Well,
and, you know, for those of us who are a bit thought three buckets was a bit complicated, I thought this had been taken on board, and it hasn't. The other thing is that, and this is going to be maybe an issue for the future now that convergence is sort of dead, that the FASB approach was not given a fair crack of the whip in the previous staff paper. So I think that. Well, we certainly wouldn't change our view. We prefer your view, but for exactly the reasons you said, it's a better reflection of economic reality. We'd rather see the deterioration of credit quality on a more direct basis instead of through some sort of prism or fog of movements in and out of a big reserve set up at the beginning, so all of that still holds. But I think there was a little bit of, the FASB would be big bar provisioning prudence, and actually that's not true. There was lots of rumours that they've been lent on by the prudential regulators, which they deny. And there is a sort of legitimate... Oh, the other thing was, when you used the word portion in the original paper, and now it's clearer it's sort of 12 months. But when you used portion, I took that to mean that there was an estimate of full life losses, and a portion of those, maybe it would be 12 months or maybe it wouldn't, depend, because there is a case for saying that 12 months is arbitrary, that certain types of defaults happen towards the end of a contract rather than at the beginning. So if there is an estimate for full lifetime loss at the beginning, obviously we'd like to see that in the notes. That's interesting. And there is a case for saying, well, if you've done that estimate, why not provide for it up front? So I wouldn't support that, but I think that some of these sort of questions haven't been taken seriously enough.
Well, just on the first, the name of the model, we're calling it three buckets, but there really is just two in terms of measurement. There's the initial bucket, which all the assets fall into, and then after, once they hit the criteria for recognition of lifetime loss, then they recognise the full lifetime loss then. So I think we've tried to move away from this three buckets name, but it's sort of just stuck for communication reasons, I guess, to make sure that we're talking about the same model. On the FASB approach, we're still, our understanding is that this approach is a full lifetime loss from day one forward. However, the FASB haven't presented their alternative model to the board yet, and they'll be doing so at the November meeting, at which chance there'll be the opportunity for that to get the full, exposure to us and for the board to understand that a little bit better through an education session. And I guess in terms of, yes, we use the, in some of the documentation, we talk about a portion up front and then lifetime loss later on. And the portion is the 12-month expected loss, and the board's already decided that. So I think we probably should have been a bit clearer from the start that it was just 12 months expected loss and lifetime expected loss. From the beginning
of... Sorry, does that mean... So it's 12 months. Does that mean that you're not expecting preparers to work out a full lifetime loss
for,
at the beginning?
The,
you're just expecting a 12-month forward view.
That's right.
And not a holistic view of which they then take the first 12 months.
It would be... Okay. Similar to a 12-month PD times the full loss given default times the full exposure at default. So, but they wouldn't need to project forward a lifetime loss measure. If we required that a lifetime loss disclosure, then they would be required to do further calculations in order to have both the lifetime expected loss and the 12-month expected loss. So there is going to be some costs. Whether... If the FASB wants to go for a full lifetime loss, whether the board wants to have a disclosure to enable the reconciliation, that's a question that the board will have to answer at a future meeting, depending on where we go. But the board has considered whether the full lifetime loss should be taken on day one before, and have decided not to, because that wouldn't take into account the compensating effect of the premium of the higher interest to compensate for that loss. So it was done with a view to better reflecting the economics.
Can I ask a question regarding modification, not the model itself? Under US GAAP, there was a notion that if you modify it and you're still going to collect your principal on a non-discounted value, you can now record the lower interest rates. And also there was some belief that there were some elements of pretend and extend. So is there anything in your model that will suggest that if credit is modified on different terms than the original one, either reducing the level of collateral, changing the yield, extending the terms, or other things, it will consider modification, the instrument need to be remeasured, the yield need to be remeasured, and you will adjust it going forward, it will provide this, sweep it into the current impairment model rather than allowing it to continue undetected?
Yeah. In terms of modifications, there's two levels of modifications under financial instruments under IFRS's. there's a modification that results in the derecognition of the initial asset, in which case, once that's derecognized, you recognize the new asset under the modified terms, in which case you change the effective yield. Now, if it doesn't meet the derecognition requirements, you don't derecognize the asset. So what you need to do is you need to recalculate the present value using the original effective interest rate, however, with the new contractual payments. That could result in a loss, but you would not change the yield under those requirements.
Can I ask you a simple question that goes beyond it? I don't know where you cut it between a modification and a modification, but let me just give you a simple example. I'm a borrower, and I tell you, you're my banker, and I tell you, really, I cannot pay my instrument because I have some little difficulties.
Yeah.
So my financial condition is not the same as you underwritten the notes in the first place. And then certainly I understand the economic environment. Let's do that. Let me release some of the collateral. You pay principal at the end, paid in 10 years, and by the way, the amortization schedule will change. So if it's not the recognition, it's the same paper, what you're telling me is, notwithstanding the fact that you have less collateral, you extended it, or something happens, you're discounting it at the original discount rate that may not necessarily be the appropriate rate for underwriting purposes today if you're underwriting the same loan today. Would it be appropriate to rethink that in the context of how you rep this to make sure that you tighten the requirements for modification to make sure that some economic improvements are not escaping the impairment recognition?
Economic improvements?
Impairments.
I think we would say that we would definitely say in the draft that if you do give concessions for credit risk to alleviate credit risk, then it would go into the lifetime loss. It would be an indicator that you need to move to a lifetime loss impairment, in which case you take all the expected losses into account.
That's addressing my point.
Can I follow up exactly on the example of Neri? Because exactly your example, suppose you start off with a loan, say 8 years, at a coupon of 5, and after 7 years, will change a bit, and you foresee that the company will not be able to repay, and you decide to extend the loan by 10 years with a higher coupon, say 10%. If you discount those cash flows at the original 5%, you make a huge profit.
You would make a
huge profit because you discount
the 2 years
cash flows at the original 5% yield.
Wouldn't that
and
be
now a... you have you revised the coupon to 10%? So that probably is.
But in this situation, you would derecognize the original asset and would book a new asset.
One would hope.
Change the interest rate from 5 to 10%. It would be a big modification of the terms of the original loan. So you have to derecognize the old loan and have to recognize a new loan with a new effective interest rate.
So there will
and
be
in
no
this
loss.
Situation, I think it would be also, I think, maybe possible that, okay, if that would be the situation, as you called it, that you have to recognize an expected full lifetime loss in that moment where you have to modify that because there are a lot of indications that credit quality has deteriorated.
Because in both cases, would you use the same interest rate? Because that was the point you made.
You
keep using the old coupon.
If you didn't derecognize it, even if you did carry on, your contractual rates have increased so much that that implied in that is a higher risk of credit losses.
Okay.
So that would imply that you would need to recognize your lifetime losses. So then you need to look at what your expected cash flows are and reduce whatever your asset is by the amount of those expected cash flows over the life of the instrument.
So if it were 6% compared to 5, you would only record a small profit.
It's insignificant.
Yes. Okay.
I think that the 12-month ISB model is very easy to understand and simple. But at the same time, I feel some sympathy for the concern of the American prudential regulators that 12-month provisioning may not be enough, especially in view of the certain consumer-related loans in which the initial year's loss experience is typically would be much higher than the latter years of the loan period. So I've been thinking about whether there couldn't be a kind of a hybrid model. For example, the loss provisioning will be 1 year or 20% or 30% of the duration of the loan, whichever is longer. In other words, if you pick up 20%, up to 5 years, it's 1 year, 12 months, and then 10 years, it's 2 years, 30 years, it's 6 years. I think this will sort of, to me, the very natural and the intuitively understandable, because ISB's model, 12 months, for 1 year, it's 100% provisioning, 30 years, it's, one-thirtieth provisioning. This is, intuitively very difficult to accept. How about this hybrid model?
Well, I think the 12-month expected loss is arbitrary. There's no real conceptual reason why 12 months is the right figure. The slightly more conceptual approach would have been the time proportional mm-hmm. approach under the supplementary documents. And I guess the issue is once we moved away from the original ED. We have to do some kind of concession, do some simplification, but at the same time try to achieve the same outcome. Even under the supplementary documents or the three bucket model, both models require a distinction between some good book of assets and some bad book, and they both require a portion of the lifetime loss for the good book and the lifetime loss for the bad book. Now, depending on whether if you have a lower portion for the good book, then the idea is to move the recognition point for the lifetime expected losses forward, or the other way is, as the board had it in the supplementary document, is to have the recognition point for lifetime losses further back and do a more proportional allocation for the good book. So you would be taking a larger portion of the losses in the good book. And I think there's various ways that you can sort of, try and achieve the same outcome and try different combinations. But I think fundamentally there's always going to be a cut in the model in order to make that distinction. And then the other question is, depending on how quick that recognition of lifetime losses is, how much is the appropriate amount to recognize? So there's a balancing, a trade-off between those two portions.
And wouldn't it, if you would follow your proposal, wouldn't it lead to that banks would not even do lending, long-term lending? Because if we would say, for example, what you say, 20%, maybe for 1 year and then maybe 50% for a 30-year loan, wouldn't that lead to change in practice that banks would not even lending?
But that can be said for the FASB model because they require that's why I kind of proposing this one because if we require 100% loss recognition day one for 20 years, 30 years loan for the even lower credit loans, I think the market will go dead. Maybe Neri will lose his job because of the loss of this big junk bond, the long term junk bond market.
Look, the reality, in my view, there's nothing to do with the tenure, even if it's 30 years, or even 12 months loan, because lending markets, as you probably know, are seasonal. People are hitting the market, particular areas where interest happen to be low. So what you're really going to have is buckets of, origination. And sometimes they spend 1 or 2 years, and what's going to happen? And I think Steve and I had a discussion a while back, is that you're going to listen to an earning call, and people are going to say, look at our earnings, but we really had a great period. Why? Because we underwrote more than we ever underwrote it. So don't even look at our loss because it doesn't make any sense. We still have very solid underwriting. We have better underwriting than ever. It's a period of economic expansion, but please ignore our income statement because it's a day one loss.
Right. And then in the period that you're actually deteriorating, you're going to show virtually very little losses because you're already recognizing on day one. So the financial statements sometimes don't actually signify certain things that even if you're predicting those in the period that the loss are already coming through, so there's got to be some additional information that you're going to get. You may get it from earning calls that will tell you exactly how, you know, the period underwriting translates to profit and what in the P&L for the period we analysts should ignore. I think that's it. That's what we're going to be told. And just probably kind of an obvious assumption, but I think I heard from FASB that that's not what actually they mean. I don't think they meant. Mm-hmm. Maybe my misinterpretation of what they meant, that there's not going to be a day one loss, but there's going to be otherwise. If you expect on a portfolio basis to still recognize gain given the yield adjusted, model.
What do you mean by not going Larry, to recognizing gain?
No, you're not going to recognize loss on day one because in every portfolio you have an inherent loss, right? Some will not perform, but if you discount the interest that you get, given the losses, you don't really have day one loss. So it's not only the credit loss; it's the credit loss given the expected return. So I'm not sure what I interpret what they say.
That would be a very different. I mean, if they were proposing that, I'd be very happy.
My head is spinning with all the options and all the discussions, so I'm not sure whether I talk directly to them. I don't even know if I'm interpreting what they're saying. That
okay.
They're
are you saying, is this...
Isn't that example in the steady state that you don't have these problems? Because then you have always...
If you have the right underwriting and there's no inherent tying it, you sold the product at a loss for something, then theoretically you'll never have a day one loss. And then you have some elements of losses that will naturally mature as the portfolio matures, and then you recognize it over time, and ignoring changes in estimates, that's how it's going to play out.
I don't think that's their model, but we haven't seen the words yet. But
yeah. Under a steady state, impairment doesn't matter at all. I mean, the timing recognition of impairment doesn't matter at all.
I think it does make a difference because I'll tell you, I'm not suggesting that it's going to be steady state recurring, but from a steady state perspective, what you really have is at any given period, you expect that there's going to be some losses and expect your interest income. From a steady state, what you're going to have is interest income.
Yeah.
And then the loss is going to materialize over the portfolio at some point. And then the question is, you know what they're going to be if you have a right underwriting. And then from accounting perspective, all you have to do is associate those in some elements of, attribution.
Yeah.
Expectations based on the portfolio.
But in a steady state,
earlier than later, you dribble it into P&L.
Yeah, but under a steady state, the timing of recognition doesn't end up mattering.
Yeah.
Because as long as it's the timing of recognition is constant, then it's all just going to be affect your balance sheet and your P&L will be flat.
Sue.
Yeah, I was a big fan of the original ET and the amortization sort of within the rate, but as that's been abandoned unless it gets new life, I've then been sort of, I really don't like this bucketing approach in terms of 12 months and the full life. I accept that maybe there's some signaling in there, so I think we'll see how that plays out in terms of the deterioration, but I think there will be some sort of stickiness and then falling over cliffs. And I suppose if that's going to be the scenario, then I think to me it's quite important that we have the disaggregation of, how much is measured under the various, I suppose we have two measurement bases. Yeah. And it may be also important just to understand, because the second bucket, actually part of it's going to be measured on portfolio basis and part of it's individually. And I suppose that would provide some useful information to know how the portfolio overall is being managed, but certainly disaggregation so we understand what portion the 12-month measurement is versus the full life term.
Just one last comment. Make sure they don't net anything. Because I'm listening to this conversation and portfolio is deteriorating and there'll be such a tendency to say, yes, but, so the net effect is zero. So just...
So in the roll forward, so that they show the movements and they don't net the movements off.
They're To expand on Sue's disaggregation comment, on the roll forwards, you have to pay attention to two things. You're not allowed to net, so you have to show the negative and the positive. And the other thing is, and there's no absolute rule about this, but other needs to really be less than the next biggest thing. And one of these presentations, other was twice as big as the two. There were five buckets, and it was the Nestle one. And you looked at it, the other was twice the size of two other reported units. So I don't know how you write a standard that says other can't be ridiculous or can't be large, but in principle, other should be smaller than everything else that you, because you shouldn't be aggregating. And just to be clear, you very important not to put positive and negatives into other. If you must have an other, it must be negatives and positives together. You can't aggregate, because that's a beautiful way of smoothing things out.
Okay, thank you for your thoughts. Thanks, Ben. Yeah. We're going to go on to education.